All right, we're back. Well, we're almost done. You know, one thing that we didn't touch upon was how did all of us, you know, we all hung out together. Henry. Hello. Hello, 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 hello. Hello, 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 hello.
Breaks over.
You know, we all really know each other. You know, Henry Valdez, Peebs, Carlos, Marty Rodriguez. You know, we all know each other from being DJs. You know, how did all of us meet? Because I know that I met this guy, and this guy introduced me to the other guy that I told you guys earlier that we won't mention. And, you know, Carlos introduced me to all you guys. I mean, I know I heard of Peebo, and I heard of Marty, and I heard of, you know, Henry. But how did I meet you when we first talked?
Well, when I first came back, when I came here from Puerto Rico, I went looking for jobs, and I went to the Pantera Rosa, and I went to another place out in East L.A., and I auditioned, and I got a job at La Pantera Rosa, and I met Henry. And then Henry says, "You got to meet my buddy Carlos," and he's a really good DJ too. And so Henry introduced me to Carlos. And then we had I think I met you at the store. We had a store called Record Galaxy in Montebello, and he was just a teenager, and a lot of young DJs would come in there and buy their records. And I think that's how we met.
Right. You know, we're winding down here, guys. It's getting really hot and stuff. But you know, Carlos.
What was the question?
How did all of us meet? How did I meet you?
Well, we had
George Tong introduced.
I don't. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. It was a small DJ community. There was mobiles playing backyard parties, and then there was club DJs. There wasn't many clubs, and we kind of all stuck together and found each other, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah, we kind of all vibe.
Because you all learn from each other.
Everybody, at the end of the night, and I know that you guys are. Everybody went up to Quiet Canyon, and we all hung out. The club was over, and everybody would hang out, you know, up in, you know, the hill up there in the parking lot after. And we would stay out there till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and that was like a first DJ workshop, because all the DJs from all the clubs would show up there, and everybody would you know, hey, are you playing? You know, I've just got this record. It's a hot tune. So, I mean, it was the first workshop where everybody was discussing everything.
So, anyway, let me continue.
Go ahead.
So, anyway,
you
know, we were the early DJs, but there's other DJs in the house here I want to acknowledge. Joe Casillas, there's Joseph Wham, there's Domingo.
Joseph Wham.
DJ Adrian.
JC Dakota.
There's my understudy right there. I think I gave him his first job. And he's look what he turned out to be. So, you know, staying together, bonding, and, you know, sharing mixes, and I think that's a lot.
Carlos introduced me to so many people in the business. I mean, when we would go to New York, we were totally hooked up, man. Everywhere, the food was taken care of. You know, all the record label swag, all the promo records. You know, everything was that I learned about that was from these guys right here, along with Marty, who, like, again, he's my mentor, man. I would hear that guy spin records, and I mean, he just blew my mind. I mean, he really, really is a phenomenal mixer. Carlos, you know, introduced me around to the business, and you know, what DJs like have you guys heard? You know, recently, and I got to tell you, I want to be first at this, because that guy right there, you know, is you know, old school mixing, man. And you know, I know that, you know, Carlos said that he got him his first gig. You know, he worked, you know, in our studios with all of us, and you know, he picked up a lot of stuff. And right now, you know, I'm sure that there's many others that I haven't heard that are very good. But from what I've heard them at Vanguard a couple of times. I hear them on the radio all the time. Raul's an excellent, excellent mixer, and I appreciate that. How about you guys? Tell me something. Tell me somebody that
I haven't been out much. I haven't heard him yet, so I think it's going to be Charlie Brown.
You're backing him up.
Well, not too long ago, I had the pleasure of hearing Eric Murillo, and he was really, really good.
Cool. What was the name of that guy who stayed here in Miami? What did you like about Eric Murillo?
I like the music that he played, and I like the way that he played. And he would, you know, like when you're a DJ aficionado like we are, there's certain things about a DJ that maybe your ear picks up on that the dance floor isn't really picking up on. It's just the way he brought in the record, you know, and the fact that he was flawless.
Can I say something? The best DJs I've ever heard, three DJs. They're all New Yorkers. It's Tony Humphries. Oh. Mind-blowing. David Morales and Little Louis Vega.
Yeah, no, well, what about the time that you know, and I think people went with us this one time where we went. We actually got to go to hear Larry Levan.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I mean, at Paradise
but
Garage. He wasn't that great of a technician, but it was more what he played, yeah. and that goes a long way as well. You know, as far as you know, mixing skills. You know, that was somebody that didn't have that much, but what he played was just. You know, breathtaking music, man. He put it together where it worked, and he was in control of his room. And this was when DJs would work 10, 12-hour shifts. And he was doing that. One dude, 10, 12-hour shifts, and he was in control. Right. The last thing that I want to talk about, you know, you guys are going to, this one's going to stump your brains, okay? You know, from the times, like the 70s, we'll say like from 70 to 85, your most, this is the last question, and then I'm going to open the floor up so you guys can ask questions to these guys. What was your most memorable moment, man? Like, you know, something that's just burned in your brain, and you know, you'll never, ever forget it. And I'm sure there's a lot.
Yeah, I was real fortunate because I worked consistently for about 11 years in clubs. But I would have to say it was early in my career. It was October 25th, which was the day after my first son was born, 1980. And I don't know, it was something about my first son being born that I went to the club that night, and I was so on top of the world that it didn't matter what I played to a Latin crowd, a salsa crowd on top of that they danced to it. And one in particular song was called Underwater by Harry Thuman. And Harry Thuman, the song Underwater, is a super synthesized, tons of layers of synthesizers, and I mixed it out of Love Is In You, and I really not a record for a salsa crowd, but it's like a DJ's aura is what really packs a crowd, and it fills up a whole room. And I was so high that night, naturally, that I'll never forget that night. That was, to me, you know, my night.
Carlos.
I had 1,001. Do you want the X version or the R-rated? Or check it out. Okay, from 80 to like 89... I played in all the exclusive Beverly Hills clubs. Some of them were, I played in a room one night where it was Johnny Carson, Dean Martin, Sylvester Stallone, like part of the crowd. But I'm going to tell you.
Tell him the story about Ringo Starr.
Well, no, that's not the story.
Tell him that one. Right?
Check this story out. This is even better. I was playing at Walla, which was in the Beverly Center, in the parking level. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I had just burned out the crowd, and you know, all of a sudden Prince walks in, and I knew Prince was there because of his big bodyguard, this guy named Chick, who was like a wrestler. And I don't know why all the artists, they migrate towards the DJ booth, you know. So he was standing near the DJ booth. He wasn't dancing. And there was Chick. It was Chick and Prince. And I just remembered I had the acetate of When Doves Cry that I had received on the same day. I was a Billboard reporter, so I was receiving records like the same day. Same day mail, like Federal Express, UPS, and, you know, all those. All those people were at my house every day. It was like Christmas. And I remember I had When Doves Cry, but I hadn't played it all night. And also when I saw Prince, I remembered, so I played it. And Prince would only dance to his music. I don't know if you guys ever, you know, been in the club with Prince. He only dances to his music. He won't dance to any other music. So I played it. All of a sudden I jammed into it. Prince ran out to the dance floor. And after the song was over, his bodyguard came up to me and asked me where the hell I got that record. You know, they were like baffled. And I was like, why? Why do you ask? And he goes, well, Prince just turned it in this morning to Warner Brothers. And I had it that night. That was memorable to me.
Tell him the one about Ringo Starr. You got to tell him that story.
I was playing at Trams of London, which was in the Beverly Center between the Hard Rock and Voila. And I noticed that Ringo Starr was there that night. It was a little club. I mean, and not much more than these, you know, than this many people here. But it was all important people. You had to be somebody to be there. Of course, Ringo was there. It was owned by Jackie Collins, Joan Collins' sister. So he was there or whatever, you know. I mean, to me, you know, it was just like us being there, right? I mean, I was there playing all the time. So I go to the bathroom, and in the bathroom, I know that Prince was in the stall because his bodyguard would always stand in front of the door. I guess so nobody would see his pee-pee or something, I don't know. So I'm using the urinal, and there's two urinals in a stall. So I'm using the urinal. All of a sudden, Ringo comes and uses the urinal right next to me. He looks at me, and I look at him, right? And he goes, oh, you the DJ. You know, I'm not good at a British accent, but he said it something like that. And I said, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he goes, well, you're the worst DJ I've ever heard. So, and I said, hey, you're my least favorite Beatle.
And I
just like that, I could hear Prince just busting up in the bathroom.
Okay, I got a couple stories here. This was one that happened to me at Fantasia downtown right here. I was doing, I think Marty had left already. And I was doing the whole Friday 12-hour shift, 4 in the morning to 4 at night. And there was a customer there that had been staying in the hotel upstairs. And he had been partying up there for like 3 days nonstop because he kept coming down to the club every time it opened. And, you know, he comes into the club and he's just dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. And before you know it, the manager comes up to me and says, Steve, you got to lower the music, man. You got to lower the music. So I turned it down a little bit. He comes back, you know, 2-3 minutes. Steve, you know, you got to lower the music. Lower it down a little more. He comes back. No, Steve, you got to fucking lower the music. He says, there's a guy having a heart attack on the dance floor right now. That was the one that happened to me. Another one that happened was at the Palace in Hollywood. You know, they had the DJ booth was up on the side of the wall, and you know, the DJ booth was on one side, and on the other side, the little partition that came out, they put a table that was level with the railing, and girls would get up there and start dancing and stuff, and this one chick was up there dancing, and she fell right into the right on the dance floor. And the, you know, the paramedics came. They shut the room down. It was just a big, big issue that that happened. Also, here's the Prince one. This happened to me in the studio. I was working with him, and you know, he we could never communicate with him, even though he was here next to the room. We had to sign a paper that, you know, we wouldn't, you know, like a waiver where you know, we wouldn't say anything to any, you know, publications about him. You know, we wouldn't talk to him. We wouldn't look him in the eye. What we had to do was we had to, you know, he would make comments and he would call his secretary in Minnesota and she would call back and give us direction on where to go.
I never spoke to him.
And the thing, this one time, I was doing some editing on the tune, Seven was the song. And, you know, he wanted his guitar solo shortened in the song. So, you know, I got direction to do it, and I did it. And he happens to, I see a limo pull up outside. I didn't think anything about it. He calls in, you know, yeah, okay, play me what you got. So I hit the two track, you know, held the phone up. And he says, wait a minute, I'm coming in. So the door swings open, and he comes in, and he's standing there. And he has his back turned to me, and he hits the two track and starts playing the reel. And not looking at me, he says, okay, with a show of hands, how many people love what they just heard? And I, you know, I'm the only one there.
So you want to
do? Yeah. Yeah, you know. And he goes, that's what I thought. If you don't love it, I'll for sure hate it. So don't even bother me with that. Show me stuff that you really, really love. And I was like, oh, my God.
The weirdo.
That, you know, I want to, if you guys have any questions that you'd like to ask these guys, please feel free. Anybody? Joe Casillas, Mixmaster Joe Casillas.
Oh, yes. Well, Carlos, we were in a record pool back in, 1978 with Don Johnson, and we were getting the hits, but there wasn't too much disco. What were we playing at that time?
You know, we were buying records.
Yeah, we were buying records.
Yeah, and what was the name of the pool? I don't remember.
It was... Don Johnson, it was, what the heck was it called?
Is it American or?
American is something
that
else.
Source.
We're talking about probably the first record pool in Southern California.
Outside of Skagit. No, outside of that. And actually, Skagit, they wouldn't let us into, they wouldn't let us into Southern California.
No.
You and I were members. And, you know, I got to thank Don Johnson. Yeah, not the actor. This guy wasn't no actor, but I mean, I got to thank him because he gave me the opportunity. Actually, he told me they're having auditions at this club in Beverly Hills. And I was looking for work. I went there and I got the job. And that started off my career as a DJ, I guess. From there on, I never
lacked work. You know what I remember about Don Johnson? This is what he was... He was basically saying, you know what, Joe? Scratching is the end thing. You got to cut your record with a razor blade and use nail polish, and put it in certain areas because that's how you want to scratch. And this was back in 1978.
But I don't think he knew what he was talking about.
But I mean, but seriously, he was talking about it and just cutting the record and putting nail polish.
Maybe he was talking about marking
the
record.
Whoa.
No, Don Johnson was a piece of work.
I mean, I don't think that any of us were scratch DJs, you know what I mean?
No.
I mean,
and then I got asked people, you are my idol, okay? I'm not taking anything away from you, Carlos, but people, I used to go down to the Pantera Rosa and listen to this guy, and he would be mixing Police, you know, what's that song, Down Tempo?
When I,
No. It was a real backbeat, drum beat, instrumental.
Walking on the Moon or something?
I'll Be Watching You, wasn't it?
What was it, people? It was... Anyway, he would be mixing Police with the funk, you know, the Patricia Russian and this other stuff, and then he'd go into disco and, like, I mean, flawless, two, 3 minute overlays that were always just like.
Let me say something. You know, it was hard to play at Pantera. I played there. The DJ booth was a little bit, you know, far from the dance floor.
Oh yeah.
And there was no monitor. Did you have a monitor then?
Yeah, when I started there, I said, there's no way. I brought in monitors and 1200s. I bought my own.
But remember at the time, people, they had digital turntables. They had the 1500s, like circus, the quartz ones.
I remember the Pantera Rosa used to have, what was it, the 1500s?
They had the 1500s.
Yeah. They had the 1500s, and I remember that I came down there, and I said, you know what, people, you're getting too much rumble. Why don't you put... like that styrofoam popcorn underneath it to kill the rumble. And it was funny because after that, the manager talked to me, goes, what do you know about electronics? Well, I need your helicopter fix, and I need the amplifier. And all of a sudden, I was the technician there. It was funny. But the highlight of my DJ career, one of the highlights is when people asked me to, you know, he needed to take a couple days off. And he asked me to DJ, you know, guest DJ for him one night. And people were coming up to me, where's people? Even though whatever I would play, they just said, where's people? You know, because, I mean, hands down, you were like top notch. I'd go to see you to Tropicana, and I was just like, man, this guy is just awesome.
How come we didn't talk about Tropicana?
Anyway.
Well, I was at the. I did a lot of clubs. I did a club called Mr. J's, which was a funk club in El Monte for 2.5 years, and I went from Fantasia to Mr. J's, and so I had to adjust from high energy new wave to funk, like Carlos said, Atomic Dog, and you know songs like that, but a lot of freestyle. And then I went to Fantasia. Then I went to the Tropicana for 2.5 years, and that was like a super high energy new wave club that. It was puro disco, you know, a la circus. And I had a lot of fun there, too. But the crazy thing about that place is that the drinks were free for the DJs. You had unlimited guest privileges, food. I mean, they treated you like a king. So
what about the strip bar upstairs?
And then they had, on the second floor... The second floor, they had female wrestling, mud wrestling.
And they paid really good.
And they paid very good. Very good. And they had, like, the best DJ booth. They had 3 turntables. They had 2 monitors completely enclosed. I mean, it was great.
Okay, you know, we're going to get a question here from Raul. Campos.
Yeah, Steve said I couldn't come in if I didn't have a question. That's my price of admission to come in for this panel. So, everybody has to ask a question. So my question to you guys, first there's a little story behind it. Yes, Mr. Mongalo, Carlos Mongalo, you did give me my first gig. It was a fluke, and I owe you tremendously for everything. I walked into a rock night.
You're still waiting, right?
I walked into a rock night, and he was...
Every day I check the mail.
Checks in the mail. So, yes, I give you mad props for giving me the first gig. Stevie B for showing me basically crowd control and mixing technique and people.
Thank Mark. I learned it from Mark.
Well, that's coming. And then Peeble, of course, for the record store. I mean, obviously, it was indirect, but through No Rock Records with Walker and everybody there with Thump Records, and that was basically headquarters. That was one of the best record stores around. So I wasn't able to go like to Cut Above or any of the old school record stores that you guys have talked about probably, but that was definitely one of my stores that I really started buying records back in the day. And all of you guys are responsible for introducing me to Martin Rodriguez. And basically, we all met maybe a few days apart from everybody. You introduced me to Steve, Peebo, Martin. When he walked in, he had that thing from Hoka on his forehead that I don't know if you guys have talked about that yet. That was the story I wanted to hear.
Hoka came up.
Hoka's his ex-wife.
He shafted all of us, I got to tell you.
But anyway,
you think this guy's all right?
I'm getting to the question finally, where you guys actually introduced me to Martin Rodriguez, and I was back then going to work on a bootleg, on a mix CD, on a mixer, and you guys all said, go work with Martin. He has a studio, he has reel-to-reels, he knows how to edit, and so I took all my turntables, and I took my records that I was going to play, and when I walked in, everybody came through those doors, whether it was Cesar De Niro, Joseph Wham, Dompe, everybody was walking in. Everybody was walking into Martin Rodriguez, and he was in the back house. But that's really the time when I realized that I was part of something special, where all these guys that are still just the boys, you know, everybody hangs out, everybody's cool with each other, and it's a team, it's a unit. And like you mentioned earlier, that you guys would all get together, maybe after a club or at somebody's pad, listen to records and say, oh, I got this brand new record, got that brand new record. But that was really my time. Those few weeks when I was working with Martin was the time when I realized that I was part of something special. Being a DJ here in LA, being a producer or working on mix CDs or listening to you
or
guys
an air
DJ,
personality.
Something like that. My question to you guys, each individually, not when you first started DJing, you know, that's probably you guys probably mentioned that, like when you guys first mixed, but when did it happen that you guys realized that you guys were part of something special? What was that one clicking moment that you guys said, man, we're part of something that's happening really cool here in LA?
For me, it was when the first time, I mean, like I said, there was never like a summit or an assembly or you know, a place where DJs from around the world. And I mean, it was only a handful of jocks around at that time. Now everybody's a jock. And, you know, I went to New York the first time, and I was like, I mean, just like you go, you know, every time you would go there, you would get inspired because you would hear the absolute best DJs in the world. And you know, to be there and you hear the music and it's just so different than, and maybe they'll get the same effect if they were to come here. But for me, you know, going there and seeing these guys play and how they would put it together and it was just so precise, and they had crowd control and you know, I mean, they just got respect. I mean, just everything like that. You know, was, you know, you came back with a good feeling and went to work the following week and you felt really good and you wanted, you know, you were inspired to do a better job and it, you know, it sometimes it helped and sometimes it didn't. But when I saw that and saw all those DJs, you know, and like I said, you know, sharing information and meeting this guy and meeting that guy and keeping in touch with them and letting them know what records you had that were hot and letting those guys know, you know, at that point I kind of felt that it was a real special thing to be a DJ. Peeps.
Well, I think when I was down at Fantasia, like I said, we were open till 4, and on Saturday night, all the DJs would come after their gigs. And I just remember one night turning around, you know, and I'm spinning, it's probably 3 o'clock or 3:15 in the morning, and I turn around, and all my buddies are standing there. And they came almost every Saturday. And so then I realized, God, this is, like, so cool, you know, for you're spinning, you're having a great time, and then all your buddies are there to share it with you, you know. And then after that, we'd go down, and we'd stand in front of Fantasia till 5 o'clock in the morning just talking, you know. So I said, this is like a real cool fraternity, because it would be Carlos and Henry and Steve.
I remember when I was playing at the Palace, and you know, like I said, the DJ booth was up high, and you know, we had these glass doors, and we called it the executive patio, and we had to walk through this fire escape, and you now were outside of the club, and you can still, you know, have access to your turntables and you know, do your thing and come back in. But I remember, you know, that you know, I would invite my friends down, and nobody want, you know, they weren't hip to coming to Hollywood. You know, it was just too far for them to drive out from there and late and what have you. But Carlos worked in Beverly Hills, and I remember every Saturday night you know, I would look at my watch and it's like 2:30, and I would say, like, I'm going to look outside, and Carlos Magallo would be sitting there waiting for me to go, like, hey, come on up. You know, and I had this billboard reporting DJ, you know, who would give me music and you know, turn me on to things and introduce me to all these cool people. I felt that, you know, this is a good friend to me. And you know, it also made me feel really special that people would come to this place and hear me play.
Well, I wasn't only there to see you.
All right, bro. Thank you.
You were part of it, you know. We had a mutual friend named Alan.
It was because I got you in free, that's why.
That too. But Alan would have got me in anyway. Remember Alan? Alan Parada. You know, he's an OG DJ that should be mentioned.
We
all knew him.
He gave me and Michael Moore, you know, God rest his soul, he gave me and Michael Moore a Saturday, because he didn't want the job anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was moving on. He was an actor, and he was getting these gigs. He didn't want that job anymore, so he hooked me, and we had alternating Saturdays, Michael Moore and myself.
Well, anyway, with me, I really didn't know that we had something special, you know, at the time. But times like this are... that make me realize that there was something special. Charlie Brown, I heard he's one of the top DJs. I haven't heard you yet, so your best critic. Your best critic is, you know, still at large. I want to see what I created, you know. And a lot of DJs, any DJ that wanted to be a DJ that would come up to me and ask me for help, I would do whatever I could to help them. And I know that there was a lot of DJs out there, a lot of top DJs that I got started. I don't know if they'll acknowledge it, but, you know, maybe they don't want to pay. But times like this is when I know that something special happened. So it's all in retrospect.
Okay, and next question. Does somebody else have a question? Hey, don't forget, I told, you know, I want JC Dakota to ask something. Or, you know, Joseph Wham. You know, I told you guys, you show up, you got to ask him. And who else is hiding? Where's Adrian at? Adrian,
where's
better
Adrian?
Ask a question.
Orale. I'm. Okay, my name is Domingo.
What's your name?
Domingo. D-O-M-I-N-G-O. Who is your... Name some of your understudies, because I know because you guys are my... I hang out with you guys, but there's guys that came up, like, Steve Factor was one of your understudies. Raul Campos was another one of your understudies. Taylor was one of your understudies. So, I mean, I don't know. Is there any others?
Well, I got to tell you, Taylor was my light man at Fantasia downtown. You know, he went up to be a... I mean, he's an awesome jock, man. And, he's done a lot of things. And he's, you know, a lot of work that he's got out there. You know, I remember when he started... You know, he would ask me, you know, hey, Steve, you know, when you go to the restroom, you know, can I play some records? And I'd say, go ahead, man. You know what I mean? And it was like the off nights. So, you know, he would say, go ahead and do his thing. And before you know it, he started bringing records in and doing a set. And boom, it elevated from there.
I have to say Taylor, too, because he was a drummer. He was from Seattle. And he used to just watch a spin. And he was there when we brought house. He'll tell the story that we introduced him to house music from, you know, we brought it from New York. But other than that, I can't think of anybody.
I've had many. I don't know. Victor Cedeno was my light man. Is he still around?
Yeah, he was supposed to be here, but he couldn't make it.
He was my light man. At one time, we were, myself and people were Billboard reporters, and there was four or five others. I think there was seven at one time in L.A. And out of the seven, you know, people and myself excluded, three of those other four were brought up by me. And they were all Billboard reporters.
Hey, you know what else you created? Raul's a Billboard reporter now.
All right. All right. All right.
I need vinyl, bro.
So one last question. Stevie. We come from the old school. You know, we did a lot of the mobile DJs. I mean, it's It's different to set up a system, spend 2 or 3 hours setting this up, having thousands of people come down partying, and just seeing all these people. I mean, the mobile DJ is, I'm not taking anything away from the club, because it's just two different environments. We got to play a lot of the stuff that they normally wouldn't play in the club. How did you feel about that?
Well, I loved it. I mean, we were able to create vibes and, you know, all the new records that I would spend my dollars on, you know, I had to use them. You know, I obviously heard something that I liked about them, and that's the reason why I bought it. I mean, I wouldn't just go out and, you know, spend all my money and get everything brand new. You know, we tried to you know, we kind of developed the sound. And, you know, like we would hear the Debbie Deb records and the Pretty Tony records. And, you know, that was the cool stuff at Florentine Gardens. You know, the stuff like Eve Electro, Take a Bite, you know, all this weird, you know, music that you know, it took a little bit for people to chew it. But eventually it caught on, and then it led into, like, the Latin hip-hop. I mean, you know, that's what it's called. I mean, now, back in the day, you know, they would say they were playing Latin hip-hop, but to me it was freestyle. And you know, just to see the transition in dance music go from, you know, like, and by the way, it's a never-ending loop, man. You know what I mean? You know, what I'm hearing today, and I was just telling John this, you know, last Friday we had this band that performed at our club. And, you know, it seems like the hip-hop stuff is dying down. I mean, I've heard a couple of things recently. Like, I heard a new 50 Cent recently that was absolutely, you know, you just know that it's going to be a hit record, and you're going to hear it 10 times a night at any club you go to. But it's changing back around, and I heard a band this past week that it sounds like they're doing Soul Sonic Force. And it's all the way around, you know, the disco stuff happened, and then it kind of went into freestyle and K-rock, and, you know, the house stuff came in, which, I mean, it's all disco. To me, it's disco. It just sounds different. And the mix is different, and when I say mix, their production mix is different. You know, the hip-hop stuff came in. I really was not so much into hip-hop. You know, I liked it, and I knew what good hip-hop was. But like I said, now I see it coming back around, and the sound seems to be going towards the early freestyle sound. So, getting back to your question, it was tough, sure, because, you know, the stuff that we were doing, I mean, basically what we were doing and promoting all these parties, it was like what an underground thing is now. And only, you know, you're giving flyers to people. Now everybody's doing it. They have these big venues. You know, clubs are doing it. They're bringing in outside promoters. I mean, we physically had to go out and find a hall that would let us come in there and do a gig there. And a fight would break out and all this shit would happen. And before you know it, we couldn't do that there anymore. And we'd have to go somewhere else. And, you know, like I said, the music we were doing, you know, we had a big, wider thing that we can do, as opposed to moving into clubs like I did. It kind of got choked out a little bit. I mean, like I said, you know, back in the day, you were the jock. And you did, you know, a 5 or 6 hour shift minimum by yourself. So you had to be in control of the night and be able to program it and still make everybody happy. And I come back to, you know, what I learned from Marty was programming the night and controlling the room, where, you know, you want people to dance, but you don't want everybody on the floor. You want to sell some drinks, or you have a line outside, you know, you throw a couple of bombs on the floor and some people get mad and leave, and that lets other people in the line in. So, I mean, sure, there was a learning curve to do that. And again, you know, what the thing that we talked about, people mentioned it, where, you know, you write down every song you were doing. That was my best education that I got from going from a mobile jock to a club jock was working at Fantasia downtown. And that reason was, like I told you, the DJ booth was on the floor. So if you did something that didn't work, facial expression was your learning curve right there. You would see it, and it was like, oh, man, I know I fucked up. You know what I mean?
Can I say something about mobile DJs? And since this is all being documented, I want it to be on record. I was never a mobile DJ, but that's not what I want to, what I want to be on record for. I have to say that the major influence of any mobile DJ who worked his ass off setting up equipment, doing all the hauling, and it's hard work. The major influence of a mobile DJ in our time was Michelangelo.
Oh yeah, sure.
That boy.
Michelangelo was a club in Hollywood, Geno's.
That's the only place.
It was like like we talked earlier, the early disco stuff was all gay clubs. It was all gay clubs. Michelangelo. He
influenced all the mobile DJs, playing 45s at 33 sped up, whatever it takes. I mean, he would play like, these boots are made for walking and pack the floor, you know? He was just a wild DJ. He didn't have no mixing skills. Everything was dropped in. But man, could that fucker play. It's the only place that I saw gay cholos.
Well, they were gay. When I worked, I did about 4 months at Circus once. And I had the gay nights. I had Friday nights and I had Tuesday nights. And Tuesday nights was all men. They wouldn't allow a woman in there. They guess they had said if she had an open toe shoe, she couldn't get in or something like that. But that's where I saw gay cholos. Yeah.
It's kind of
an oxymoron.
I think they're all morons.
I don't think I need this, but are you finding a trend back toward real musical melodies and beats from the real?
I mean, I've said this all, and I tell my friend John all the time that you know, melodies. I mean, they get ripped off of old records. I mean, like I tell you, it's just a never-ending circular. I think that they're trying to achieve the same kind of soul that those melodies came out with. But, you know, it's hard to achieve that when you're writing all electronic. You know, when you're writing all electronic music and, you know, to turn a sequencer off and try to give the drums that extra little swing feel, it's very difficult to do that. But as far as vocal melodies, I hear them all the time. All the time. And I tell my friend, because, you know, I work at Tattoo Downtown. I hear all these songs that they're playing. And I've heard the ripoffs of Parliament Funkadelic. I've heard the ripoffs of Technotronic vocal melodies, you know. And I know this because the normal person going to the club is not going to know it. But, you know, me being a DJ from back in the day and having really exclusive music library, you know, I know these tunes. So I can tell that, oh, yeah, that's a... And like I said, it's all been done, and it's just getting recycled over and over and over. I mean, you know, you're not... You know, 10 years ago when you were listening to you know, Janet Jackson, you know, What Have You Done For Me Lately, you're not going like, you know, wow, you know, what a fantastic song this was back then. I mean, sure, it was a club record, and it was a great dance tune, but it's not... you know, like a true song, you know, like you're hearing, you know what I mean? Who am I thinking about as a... Give me an example of a true song, you know. Frangelie, Come to Me, you know what I mean? That's a true song that you're hearing, you know, where somebody took their time to write a vocal melody specifically for a singer.
Donna Summer had a lot of,
she was a songwriter, too. Lolita Holloway, well, she's a fantastic singer. Right.
It's actually, in my
very, opinion, very musical.
Because it was about band, the house band. And if you take...
it's on.
If you take Sal Soul, for example, as, you know, I guess it's a standard, like jazz standard, you really get to appreciate it and you hear and understand why house became house, garage became garage. And when we're talking about the full circle, there's the label DFA, the DFA label,
DFA, sure.
Which they're actually performing this Saturday, and I got my ticket. they would actually research Salso in the Lido hallway because they're in New York. They're in like Williamsburg.
Well, you know, I've heard the Chemical Brothers
mm-hmm.
use grooves, Cerrone grooves.
Yeah.
Or I've heard them use Bobby Old grooves.
But here's a catch: is a lot of the DFA label, half of the music that's produced by them is all real bands, and then they bring in DJs to figure out how to put them on dance tracks. So they'll have Carl Craig remix and edit a very
avant-garde. There's no sampling. There's no sampling in there.
Yeah, there's some like there's sometimes they'll play with synth, but there's some live
there's no
bands.
Sampling. There's yeah. no sampling, is what you said.
Yeah, yeah. So. You know, it's just one of those things.
Did that answer your question?
No.
Okay. Let our master speaker here.
There always is. In music, there's always trends back. This is what I learned in music, and I forget who I heard it from. I'm not a musician. I don't want to be confused with or know, Mr. Know-It-All, but. Mathematically, music is a finite art. There's only so many chords and only so many keys. Okay? And I guess you can include...
It's you feel it. You know what I mean?
Con permiso. I hate to cut you guys off. We're running out of videotape here, and we got a lot of stuff that we want to cover, in particularly the... I mean, I grew up honoring and trying to draw your spirits into me when I would mix. A point of reference as a teacher, I need to explain to those who don't understand what a Billboard reporter is, because it is a very heavy thing. Billboard magazine records all the trackings of records, and it's very few people get invited to be a Billboard reporter. Carlos, Raul.
And people.
Just a handful of people are invited to report for that. And so I need, yeah, it's like a Nielsen rating of music.
Actually, they compile charts.
Yes, they
and,
compile.
And the hot one, the Disco 25, record companies, they order from that. And that's why it's so important. Okay. Record stores.
I wanted to just point that out, and I hate to throw a left turn in you, but we got a man who just walked in.
Cesar De Niro.
Cesar De Niro, the original... The Godfather, the mero pachanguero.
After hours at Caesar's house.
This is. We used to do Caesar's parties at the Casa Camino Real.
Let me give a quick personal rundown of Cesar De Niro.
Caesar was Sharia Moore Productions, Teddy Boys.
Our extension cords, like we were Pegasus, right? So Caesar escaped. Like he put the little line for R and steal our extension cords and shit. Hey, you be a brother band? All right, right on, bro. Hey, what's up, man? All right, bro. Domingo, Saludo. How's everybody doing?
Right? Welcome to the Caesar Show.
Where's all the alcoholics? Is there any sexy single ladies in the house?
My point. There's no point. I'm just glad to be here. This is like the return of yours truly. I go by the gentleman and or the rock of the 21st century. Cesar De Niro. Cesar Roca De Niro.
So, do you have another question, anybody?
Yeah, I have a question for you. Over the years, you mentioned that it's, you know, you got 30 years of, you know, music and mixing and stuff like that. What are your vinyl collections like?
No vinyl? All CD,
My vinyl collection exists of about 20,000 records.
20,000.
All everything I have is brand new, mint condition, 12-inch singles. Everything.
World Disco? Well, back in the days, I did backyard parties. I did the mobiles and all that. That's how I got into it.
Sure.
And, of course, going to, you know, Florentines in the mid-'80s to the late-'80s and doing all that and watching you guys spin.
Did you go to Geno's?
Never went to Geno's.
You missed out.
I've never been there, but Florentine Gardens, Mr. J's, you know, Brandy's.
Oh, those were Caesar's gigs.
Watching these guys spin, you know, was a big influence for me as well. But like I say, you know, the difference between mobile DJing and club DJing, were you guys ever invited to do any house parties, any big house parties? Like I say,
well,
you know,
I mean,
some
of us lately have been doing George's gigs, you know, where we come back and George's like the 70s disco parties. And, you know, we've done that. I've done Domingo's at the Queen Mary.
The Queen Mary,
one time.
Right. I was there.
You know, those are cool. I mean, I got to tell you, I love disco records. I mean, you know, the old disco stuff, especially like the string type disco, the Celso Orchestra and what have you. Look, he's a real promoter here, guys.
Back to disco.
Caesar, we're going to do...
I have something to say. If you guys like old disco, backtodisco.com offers that.
So you know, it was... I mean, I love the string disco. I mean, that stuff's like, you know, really, really musical to me. There's so much soul in it. And you know, it has live musicians. So there's a lot of thought and a lot of production that went into make that stuff sound good. You know, now, I mean, you know, I can write tracks at my house, you know, put my MPC up and bang out a drum beat and a groove, you know, 20 minutes tops. So, you know, it back then the live guys came in and there was a dude, you know, okay, counting you in, you know, this is the feel we're going for, you know, and it was a whole, you know, it was a, you know, a lot of, it was a whole feel. And it's very, very difficult to you know, try to get people to understand that if you didn't go through it, you know what I mean? Let's see what Peebo has to say about that.
Well, I just wanted to answer your question, and I thought probably a record that I've heard recently that I really thought was a really good throwback to disco music was the new Madonna, the latest Madonna single. I mean, I haven't heard it really here a lot, but I was in Puerto Rico for a couple of weeks. I just got back, and over there they were banging it, and it just, I don't know if, have you heard it?
I haven't heard it.
It's a great...
Oh, it's the one with Justin Timberlake.
Right. It's just a great dance disco style record. And so I think that's a throwback to maybe what you're talking about.
Okay, I have a specific question for DJ Peebo. As we all know, DJ Peebo is part of one of the most played records of all time, in my opinion. Wake Up is a founding member, producer of Stop. This is part of Adrian's question, and I really want to know, what was the inspiration? What were the pieces? How did you come up with such an incredible track, Wake Up?
Okay. I'm going to tell the truth here. the music writer, his name is Bijan. I used to work at a 12-inch distributor called JDC Records. Bijan had a few stores that his family owned, and he used to buy music for his stores. One time when I went, Bijan used to play the keyboards, and he'd say, hey, listen to this, listen to that. We have a friend named Danny Rodriguez, who was, we all know very well. He was our light man, and he worked at JDC Records also. I went to Puerto Rico. I come back, and in these 2 weeks, Bijan and Danny had hooked up with Martin, and they got together and they made a three-track. And I don't know how they made a three-track, but the original "Wake Up" was recorded at a store down in the South, in South LA, on a three-track, and it was really I had nothing to do with it. It was Danny, Martin, and Bijan.
You know, I remember when Marty would bring his player to the club that night and you know, test it out, you know.
Yeah.
This is the latest mix on it. You know?
So I got back, I had a small label called Electro Beat Records, and I had discovered Kid Frost and I had Ice-T, you know, these two guys before they blew up on my little tiny Electro Beat Records. And so when I got back, Danny came and he played it for me off of a cassette. Well, the first time I heard it, honest to God, I didn't think much of it. I didn't think much of it because he's playing it off a cassette. I said, listen, let me tell you what to do. And so I showed him, you know, I hooked him up with my producer, Dave Storrs. We went in and we re-recorded. I showed him how to set up the label, and they put it out on their own label. The first time I heard it was I went to Fantasia, and Martin played it off the two-track. And then I saw the reaction of the crowd, and then I realized what they had. So that's the honest-to-God story behind Wake Up by Stop. And then it was after that that they asked me to join the group, and then we went on tour.
Hey, bro.
One more question. Okay. Well, first of all, you guys are all my friends, and I always see it as when I started back in about 84, 85 out of high school, there's like a hierarchy I've always believed, and I've had the unique privilege of almost everybody that I admired, whether I knew them or not, I would listen to them, and I'd pick up and absorb all these traits, but I got to give it to certain guys in this town, such as you three and Martin and other guys, for being influential. So that's my thing. Anyways, my question is for Steve. Can you take a picture of me and my friends here real quick, bro?
Yeah, sure.
Welcome to the photo
workshop.
Okay,
this is DJ JC Dakota. Joseph.
My question is for all you guys, out of all the time you've been DJing to this time, which is like the best or your favorite music you guys like played or like to play it at the clubs when you were basically
at the clubs? You know what? It depends on what I'm doing. If I'm doing a house room, I really like some electro, and you know, particularly like offhand, yeah, I like Cream a lot. I like the song Cream. If I'm doing disco records, the high energy stuff, you know, the Italiano disco stuff. I understand that there's somebody doing a freestyle thing. And I would love to do that. I mean, freestyle, I really love it. I mean, I love it all, man. It's hard to say. It's hard for me to pinpoint anything. I mean, I just, you know, I'm love music. And I would like to think that the fact that when I play, it shows that I love music. It's hard to pinpoint one thing. Maybe Peeves can.
I like disco music. I like classic disco music. I like Cerrone and Souvenirs and those type of records. Those are like my favorite records.
Me, myself, I like pure disco because everything else is the illegitimate child of that.
Yeah, it sure is.
And, you know, he's so right. He's so right.
So my question to people and possibly Carlos and Steve, when did you start getting into the actual production with synthesis and drum machines? Because that was kind of like the next. I mean, we all did the turntables, we did the three turntables, we did the tape, but when did we start getting into the synthesis and the drum machines? And by the way, Stevie, I still have your dat of strike it up and move your body. When did you guys do?
He's going to answer first.
All right.
Well, you know, the early 80s, remixes were really hot, and editing was kind of like a fun thing to do. And so when I went to New York one time, I heard a DJ do an edit, and they played it on the radio. And I thought it was the only way he could do it was to cut up tape. So I went and bought a two-track, and I started doing editing. But then after that, it's like a natural progression. You go from spinning, then you go to editing. Well, you need more, so then you buy a drum machine and start monkeying around with it and a sampler. But the only thing is, we don't have any musical skills. So we're just groping, you know, for stuff. And that's when you realize your limitations.
But the turntables are a musical instrument now.
You know, I've said this all along. You know, mixing records is an art, man. I mean, just like an artist drawing pictures or a race car driver driving his car or, you know, a special basketball player doing his thing. Spinning records is the same thing, man. And it ought to really should be, it really ought to be, you know, taught as an elective class in school. I mean, everybody's a DJ now. They ought to have somebody, you know, giving people direction.
Yeah, I remember one weekend I got an idea for a riff, and I created a drum line, and I played this riff over and over again, and I played it in the club, and they danced to it. But I thought, it's not going to be like a hit. I was able to get them to dance to it, but it was a high, I guess, because it was kind of fun.
You know, moving, as far as me, you know, moving from you know, DJ and going to the whole synthesizer thing, I mean, I did it, you know, money. You know, I would have done it a lot sooner if I had some more dough. But, it, you know, I bought my first drum machine, which was a Roland TR-808, which I still have. You know, and just learned how to program, you know, all these... You know, I would see, like, these mini truck dudes driving down the street, and, you know, you'd hear the bass drum vibrating the whole bed of the truck. And I'm going, like, man, that you know, that's cool. What is it that does that, you know? So I bought it. You know who I bought an 808? I bought it off of Larry from Britannia. Larry from DMC Records. I bought his drum machine on him, off of him. And I remember that, you know, it was an instrument that just started coming back into use. And I had been working in the studio with a buddy of mine, Keith Cohen, and we would always, you know, use 808 drums and 909 drums. And, you know, we just couldn't find, you know, the correct samples. A lot of keyboard programmers he would use, you know, they didn't know what, you know, we tell them, yeah, we want an 808 kick drum. They didn't know. You mean that old drum machine? Yeah, we want that. And, yeah, you know, acid shit, you know. Right, finally, you know, we just bought one, and we started writing tracks with it. And one of the programmers that I was working with, he actually, they were very hard, very, very difficult to find one in good condition. You would find them, they were all beat up. And a lot of the acid dudes that were doing acid house music, they were just buying them up because you were able to find them at like pawn shop for $100 or whatever. And you know, guys would buy them up and just break them just so that other people wouldn't get that sound. And, you know, these guys were finding them, and they were like, I'm talking like, you know, master degree musicians that I was working with, and the best recording engineers in the world, you know, would show me their stuff, and I would show them my stuff. And I would say, like, you know, this drum machine right here is the sound of the future. You know, this is what's going to be hot. And sure enough, man, that thing, you know, everybody wanted it. They found them, and they wound up by forking out $1,000 into it to get, you know, to have MIDI put in it. And, you know, MIDI didn't exist when that drum machine was out. It was called FSK Sync, which was like a click track. You would feed the click track to that drum machine, and it would run it. They, you know, that was already dead. MIDI was the new thing. These guys would get it, and they would take it to Forat out in the valley and get those old boards MIDI-fied so they can run it, you know, with their current stuff and sequence it and lock everything up perfectly. You know, it was fun to see that happen for sure, you know, because it was a sound that, you know, I got to help develop you know, working at the parties, the backyard parties and the clubs, and playing this music that these guys were using, these drum machines, on Madonna records and Prince records. And, you know, to see that sound come back around was a really special thing. I hope that answered your question.
I appreciate you guys coming and sharing your lives. You guys have so much experience, and obviously we all have been influenced by the things you guys have done. You know, I think of music, and I always think of it goes through people's...
Wait, first of all, you didn't say your name.
I'm AJ. AJ Mora. Yeah.
I heard about you.
Love your work, man.
You made that record Jump or
that's
something
right.
like that?
That's right.
That shit was hot.
You know, the, music is such a spiritual thing. I mean, it's so therapeutic. For me, I've experienced some of my greatest therapy through music. And even leaving it for a while and coming back to it, I have found just a beautiful community and experience in it. And I think it's a beautiful thing. Just if I can get personal for a minute, is there anything in the fact that you guys have been so influential in music that you would look back and say, man, I would have done this a little bit different. I would have used this amazing healing agent a little bit differently. Just something from your personal lives that can help us all understand how powerful this music really is.
Well, you know, first of all, I got to tell you that, you know, and I'm not a racist dude, man, but you know, the whole entertainment business is run by people that are not... during the time when I was working a lot, it was run by Jewish people. And I wish that I would have embraced and got to know a lot of them more, because they seem to have come up in the business. And these were the guys that were just starting out are now running the companies. And I wish that I would have become friends with them more, you know, and spent a little bit more time and schmoozing them and... You know, me having the big budget, you know, inviting them down to the studio and buying dinner for them. And, you know, I would have done that differently and probably, you know, would have been that much more further ahead in the game.
Well, I was trying a lot of different things. I had a record store. I had a studio. I was remixing. I did get some of my mixes on Power 106. And it was kind of like then we had a big hit record in 85, which Wake Up, which really... Believe it or not, it consumed 2 years of our life, because hit records, they last that long. Probably for myself, I probably would have just stayed maybe more focused on just spinning and just DJing, and not trying to branch off into all these other areas that are part of the record business.
With me, it's a double-edged sword. I'd like to give back to the DJ community. And thereby I bring up and show my secrets to people that are trying to learn. And those are the same people that take your jobs. So I think I would have meandered through that a little differently.
You know, again, getting back to what I had mentioned earlier about this question, you know, I kind of feel that I was so busy and the way that these people would try to communicate with me. And I had people breathing down my neck. I didn't want to deal with that schmoozing stuff. And I know why they were there. I mean, they were there because, you know, we were doing something that was hot and they were trying to jump on the bandwagon. And I kind of, you know, brushed them off whenever I felt that. And I probably should not have done that. And should have been a little bit more embracing to them. And now that I think about it, I think that would have probably, you know, again, furthered my career. Exactly.
All right. We want to thank you all for coming to G727.
Wait. One last thing. I invited you guys here because you guys are my friends. And I absolutely love you guys. And I appreciate everything that you guys have ever done for me on my DJ career, man. I appreciate it.
Holler at your boy.
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Beltran, DJ Peebo, Carlos Mongalo.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
DJ panel
Thank you
number
for coming.
DJ panel number 4 here at G727. Next Wednesday will be dark, but you can come down on Thursday for the art walk. We will have DJ spinning. Party time. The following panel will be probably on a Saturday. It will be launching the KCET web stories.
I want to talk to you.
And that's going to be a party and a half at Adrian's house. If you want to
meet Adrian over at Pete's.
Tony teaser. Hey, listen.
If you guys want to go eat at Pete's, Adrian's going to be hosting. But he's not going to be treating.
Listen. One more thing I'd like to say. You know, Jerry, we talked about doing something, a panel on mobile jocks during that time. So we'll start looking for that. And if you have any suggestions, speak to Jerry or myself about who we should have on this panel.
Yes. Thank you all for coming. Yes, can we take a group shot? Can we have everybody...